Yeah, you can listen to a talk by the Folk High School leader and education researcher Eivind Wikstrøm when the world came to Norway. It is a recording from the Peace Conference 2016 near Ulfborg in Western Jutland in Denmark on the 13th April 2016. The conference was named Stop Wars, Not Refugees.
Next speaker is Eivind Wikstrøm. He is Norwegian. He works for the United Nations in the Middle East and Ukraine. He just came back from Ukraine not so long ago. And he's also been involved in the reception of newly arrived refugees in Norway and who have been in Hornsjø, where the Traveling Folk High School of Norway, they are also living. So welcome, Eivind.
I'm going to speak a little bit from the Norwegian perspective because Norway is a country which is a little bit more far north. It's more isolated related to the rest of the world, and what happened last year was a shock to Norway. So I'm going to speak a little bit from that perspective. I'm going to tell a little bit about what happened when the refugees came to Norway, to Hornsjø last October, and then I move over to the general picture, repeating some of what Gitta said, and then looking more into what's the reasons for those war refugees coming, and then concluding with what has to be done. Now, we established the refugee center at Hornsjø. That's a high mountain hotel in Norway, completely isolated, and their neighbor is 15 kilometers away. So it's up in the mountains, and that's more or less the only building there. And we said to the ministry, we will love to be a refugee center. And we started preparing. Then we got a call telling they are coming. So we were a group of people in the reception of the hotel. At 4 o'clock in the night, the first cars arrived. They had then been driving across the mountain for 3/4 of an hour without seeing a single house. Completely darkness. One of the cars, they tried to stop it because they thought they were being kidnapped. And then they came. And the first people arrived in the reception. One of the first was a mother with a completely sleep exhausted daughter in the hand and one baby on the shoulder, just one trolley, and some other women and children coming. And the little girl, 4 years old, completely scared and completely exhausted. We gave them a bed, a room, gave them a little bit of food, and they went to sleep. 120 just arrived in 1 hour. They had been driving for 4 or 5 hours from Oslo, just put into cars. They didn't know where to go. They didn't know how long they would be going there or when they reached the place, etc. So they knew nothing. They came, they were just staring. They took some food, went to sleep. Next morning, they came out in the dining hall and were looking out the windows. And out the windows, you have mountains, you have trees, you have lakes, you have nothing. Not a single house. And they were standing there, coming directly from the war in Syria, and looking into this Norwegian desert and just wondering, where the hell am I? This little girl, 4 years, we managed to give her a teddy bear, and she was faintly smiling. Next day, she was smiling. It took me 4 days to get her relaxed and to sit on my lap. But it took 3 weeks in order, or before we managed to get the story from the mother. She told. She had been with her husband in Aleppo, and his brother and his wife. They were stopped by IS soldiers. 10 minutes later, two men lie dead on the street, shot down by IS because they couldn't answer the right question. So she took her sister or cousin, took her home, grabbed the children, two women, four children, and I started walking from Syria to Turkey, across the Mediterranean, Italy, walked more or less half through Europe, came to the Norwegian border, got arrested by the police, interrogated, sitting a whole day waiting, and at midnight they were put into cars, taken for a 5 hours drive up to our hotel. That's the story. And that's many of those stories. And that's their background. Two ladies, four children on the run throughout Europe for 2 months, and then ending up in a place like Punjab, completely isolated up in the Norwegian mountains. And we had some work to do in order to get them to relax. That's the stories. The situation in Norway related to this. We are a small, peaceful country. We don't have so many immigrants. And last year, we had a huge political fight of receiving 8,000 quota refugees through the UN system. It was a huge political discussion. And then suddenly, 30,000 arrived in just a couple of months. And Norway was just shocked. What do we do about all these people? Because here, the media exaggerated the whole problem. Because the question is, 30,000, isn't that a big amount, or is it not? What is it? When we look into it, we are 5 million people in that huge country. And of these 5 million, more than 800,000, meaning 60%, are already immigrants. So 30,000 is more or less nothing. But they came in huge numbers, and they came with a culture, and they came with a background that we are not used to. Therefore, people reacted. They got afraid. Most, half of them, come from so-called Western countries. That means already 8%, 8 to 10% of the Norwegian population is in fact immigrants from non-Western countries. And they have been included, they have been assimilated. So, and of course there's lots of problems and discussions, etc. But those 30,000 is not a big question, basically. But they cause a big discussion and a huge concern among the Norwegian population. And the question is, where do they come from? We have 2.6% immigrants. Most of them are families. They come for work. They come for only 20% of the refugees are in fact refugees from war. The rest are immigrants seeking work because Norway is a rich country, very rich, too rich. And the question then, what is a refugee as such? Because a person who has been exposed to persecution or repression in own country and therefore needs protection is what UN defines as a refugee. But, and therefore UN bodies and UN organizations then have the right and the responsibility to give them protection. But if they are just refugees in their own country, internal displaced people, UN has no right or obligation to assist them. And there's a huge difference then in what are the possibilities and the international community's responsibility, formal, legal. Totally, there are now 60 million people worldwide as refugees, internal displaced or refugees. Of these, half of them are children. Half of them, 25 million of these are children under the age of 18. And it is the poor countries who are receiving most of them. Those coming to Europe, to the rich land, they are just a minority. Syria has 11,600, Palestine 5.5, as you said, is the biggest, and until the Syrian crisis, was the biggest refugee crisis in the world, and maybe also the most difficult one, because it's so complicated, political, cultural, religious, etc., etc. Colombia, 6.4 million. Congo, 3.3 million. Pakistan has 2.3 million. Who hears about the Pakistani refugees? And just to compare, who has heard about the Congo refugees or war? It's also called the African World War, because it was 8 countries involved from 1998 to 2003, killing 3.5 million people. And 3.3 million internal displaced in Congo alone. That has never been headlines in European newspapers, not to say Norwegian. We scarcely know where is Congo. 21 billion have crossed borders from Palestine, 5 million, Syria, 4.5, Afghanistan, 2.7, etc. And Syria has at least 7.5 million internal displaced. Colombia, 6 million. Iraq, at least 3.3, Sudan, and Congo. And when others, where are they? Jordan, 2.8 million, a poor country. Palestine has more than 2 million internals. Turkey, 2.5, where of which 250,000 in camps. 250,000 in tent camps. Lebanon, 1.6, as Jutta said, almost a third of the population. And Lebanon is a very fragile country with huge political contradictions and problems. Pakistan, 1.5 million. And that means really relative amount is that in fact Palestine, 46% of the population are internally displaced or refugees. When it comes to Syria, which has been on the headlines now, most of the refugees, they are in Turkey, 1.8 million. And Lebanon, 1.1, Iraq, 250,000 of the fleeing first from Iraq to Syria and then from Syria back to Iraq. Jordan, 600,000. And then also Libya, which now have their own problem. And Egypt, 130,000. So the political, let's say, slogan is to create possibilities and hopes in the local areas. This is the Syrian refugee camp just inside the Jordan border. Here you have 95,000 people in tents. 95,000 people in tents in the desert, close to the Syrian border. How do you create hopes and possibilities in such a situation? Well, that's the slogan, and that is in fact the only solution also. So, of course, there are so many who are just desperate for solutions, desperate for possibilities. They try anything in order to get to better prosperity, to better situations. They try everything. And therefore, they come to Europe. More than 1 million arrived in Europe last year. Most of them through Italy and Greece. 4,000 drowned on their way across the Mediterranean. And the result is that the European Union is almost breaking apart. Ukraine alone, 1.7 million internal displaced, plus 700,000 refugees in Russia and in other countries in Europe. Alone. We used to compare this, if a war broke out in Norway, for example, in the northern part of Norway, Finnmark, the northern part of Norway, this would say that 150, compared to Ukraine, it would say that 150,000 people from northern Norway would run south, there's not even that many people up there. So 30,000 arrived in Norway in autumn 2015, about half of them from Syria. And Norway imposed strict rules. So in order to stop the refugees to come, we have a pretty conservative government for the time being, with the so-called Future Party in the government. And they have imposed a lot of various rules trying to stop those refugees. And this has concerned the UN, so that the UN has said that Norwegian restrictions are in fact starting to be against humanitarian law, human rights and UN regulations. The Norwegian Peace Research Institute, they said that it seems that the purpose of these regulations is not related to security and safety and protection. They have another purpose, they say, very politely and diplomatically. And so far this year, 180,000 have already crossed the Mediterranean. And by February only alone, 62,000 arrived Greece from Turkey, and that's 35 times as much as the same month last year. So to say that the rush has diminished is not correct. 90,000 have arrived Germany alone so far. And the peace negotiation in Syria is very fragile. Crisis is ongoing because also some of the warring parties are not included in the peace negotiations. And in Libya, the crisis is just increasing. IS is getting more and more hold of that. So, what is basically the question is then, what happened down there? Why are all these people coming? Of course, it's because of war, but why is there war? And in order to understand this, we have to go back in history. In Norway, we have something called the 17th of May, the national day, and then everybody is out celebrating. And in some way, we are celebrating the king and the country and the beautiful nature, etc. But basically, we are celebrating our national state, saying that all Norwegians are Norwegians. We are one unit, we are one nation, we are one people. And we trust our government, because our government, police, the army, etc., they act on our interests. Meaning, the police, the legal institutions, the government, etc., and we have the same interests. Basically, this is not the same situation in Middle East. The Ottoman Empire, meaning the result of the Muslim expansion, lasted for 1,000 years. 1,000 years from Muhammad until the end of the First World War. This was not a nation, it was an empire, meaning you had a ruler sitting in Istanbul, having the control of the whole area. And the purpose of the people was, in fact, to pay taxes. And that's it, more or less. And there was a contradiction, an interest conflict between the rulers and the people. And it was all controlled by power, by force. That ended in 1918. And then the borders in the Middle East was decided by two people, Sykes and Picot, the Minister of Foreign Affairs in France and in England, Britain, because they had detected oil. And they realized that oil would be a very important political factor in the future. So, with the findings of oil, they split the whole area according to their interests. So, Syria and Lebanon was taken control of by France, while Iraq, Saudi Arabia, the Palestinian areas was controlled by the British. And they split the border just like the colonial powers did with Africa, just using a drawer. Cut it like this. This is yours, this is mine. They said exactly the same happened in the Middle East. with France and Britain. Russia was also involved in this, but then came the communist revolution, and they had to withdraw the whole country. So, thereby, the Western powers, France and Britain, they imposed their own rulers, their own kings, their own sheikhs, etc. You have maybe seen this Lawrence of Arabia, one of those British playboy who managed to gather all the Saudi Arabian sheikhs against the Turks, etc., promising them freedom, which they didn't get after the war. Now, the whole thing, Britain had the mandate of Palestine and controlled Egypt and Syria, Iraq until 1945, 1947. France controlled Lebanon and Syria, established kings, etc. And all the kings, the leaders, etc., were approved by the UK or the France in the whole period until the end of the Second World War. And then, after the Second World War, the UN, based on the Second World War and the Holocaust, with a bad consciousness related to the Holocaust, said, now we need a country for the poor Jewish people, and they established Israel, with no recognition from the Arab countries. And therefore, of course, they couldn't accept this, that the UK and France decided to establish a new country with immigrants in the middle of the Arab world. And then came the first Israel-Palestinian war in 1948. Then you have the 1967 and a number of smaller wars in Gaza, etc., based on this conflict where a country has been established by foreign powers in the middle of a culture, the Arab culture. So Israel was regarded as, let's say, borderhood, kind of a Western beachhead in the middle of an Arab culture, and they have been enemies ever since. This created also then a feeling of nationalhood, of unity, an Arab rising, pan-Arabism with Nasser in the lead. And so they created, a unity against the foreign imperialist powers in the Middle East. And then you had the panels of the Suez Crisis, you had the oil crisis, then came the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, and then Osama bin Laden. And they were all then against the Western control of the area and the profits of the oil. So, Osama bin Laden, as a Saudi Arabian, he was trained by CIA fighting in Afghanistan, paid by CIA fighting the Saudi. And Osama bin Laden, he was of course fighting the big devil, meaning the non-religious communists. But there was another devil also, the US. But your enemy's enemy is my friend. So he was fighting the Soviets, and when the Soviets had gone from Afghanistan, he started fighting the US. A train by CIA. So, 11th of September, George Bush, and he declared the act of evil and the war on terror. But why bombing Afghanistan? The first thing he did was bombing Afghanistan. Is Afghanistan a threat to the US? They were looking for one man, Osama bin Laden, hiding up in the Bora Bora mountains. And why then bomb the whole Afghanistan? To control Afghanistan was discussed by the Senate, the US Senate, 1 year ahead of the end of September. And the reason was oil. In the Caspian Sea, there are lots of oil. But how to get to that oil? How to get it out from the Caspian Sea?
It was the abrupt end of talk by the Folk High School leader and education researcher Eivind Wistrøm when the world came to Norway. It is a recording from the Peace Conference 2016 in Tvind near Aalborg in Western Jutland in Denmark on the 13th of April 2016. The conference was named Stop Wars, Not Refugees.